obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.
Hi, good afternoon, everybody. My name is Gina B, and I am an alcoholic. I can close this. Y'all will find your space again, right? Okay. Good. Thank you. I'll just play with it, and when it ends up happening, you won't hear me talking. You'll hear on the CD the whole time because I'll be fidgeting. Thank you so much to the committee for this year's roundup. I am so honored to be able to be of service and to be a participant in any level in Alcoholics Anonymous, and especially here this year. Thank you so much for asking me to come. Thank you. And thank you for putting on an amazing conference this weekend. It's been an absolute blast so far. And why do you guys got to make me cry so much already? Jeez. Holy camoly. But where else are you going to get that in Alcoholics Anonymous, right? I love Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous has absolutely saved my life. I didn't have a life before I came here. What I had was this place where I just woke up in the morning and I was just breathing and walking around, taking up space. And I tried to take up as little space as possible. And I was miserable. And I can't tell you enough. There's not enough time in the day. There's not enough hours. I don't have a voice loud enough to tell you what a difference Alcoholics Anonymous has made to me. And I know that I'm not alone in that feeling. What I know today is I keep coming back to Alcoholics Anonymous and I keep participating in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and I keep talking to people and I keep being of service when possible and I keep working with sponsees and I keep doing all of these things to try to pass this thing on because I know how crappy I felt walking through my days when I got here. I woke up every morning and it hurt to breathe. It hurt to breathe before I got here. I would wake up and I would pray that I would just die. I had been drinking for so long already, I didn't know whether I was going to be able to wake up this morning and not drink today because it didn't even seem like it was a possibility because I didn't know that you actually could breathe without drinking. And there was no way I could fathom just continuing to do what I was doing because I was so miserable. I didn't know that I was an alcoholic. I didn't catch alcoholism until I actually got to Alcoholics Anonymous. My childhood wasn't the most fabulous one on the planet. There was all the police and the beatings and the alcoholism and the drug addiction and the neglect and the abuse and anything like that that you guys can imagine. Insert here. I was the oldest of three girls. My father died when I was 11. My mom was an addict. We lived with her and her abusive boyfriends. She would say like, hey, I'm taking off. I'm going to go get some peanut butter. You know, she'd show back up 3 days, maybe 2 weeks later. When my sisters went to had parent-teacher conferences when they were in third grade, my mom didn't go, I did. And I was like, hi, I'm here for Tina and Lisa. She's like, oh, yeah, that's great. Where's your mother? I'm like, no, I'm standing in. How are they doing now? I was only 2 years older than they were. You know, so I grew up a little bit faster than the average bear, I think, not unlike a lot of other people in Alcoholics Anonymous. But what happened is I watched what the people around me did, and I did. And what happens is I don't know where it's at, and it talks about in this book, there's some invisible line, or maybe there's no line at all. Maybe I was just born with the inability to handle my liquor at all, period, end of discussion. And I know that I have that physical manifestation of that allergy, and I have that mental obsession. So when I put in, I want more, end of discussion, that's it, and I don't care what it is. All I know is that when I started drinking, it wasn't like some magical thing that happened to me right out the gate. I don't know. I mean, the first time I actually had booze was when I was 18 months old. Dad gave it to me in the bottle, thought it was funny. I puked all over the bed. My mother was like, Frank, you know, because really? 18 months? Oh, my goodness. You know, when I first decided to start choosing alcohol for my little fix, I was 7. You know, I always was a real sensitive kid. I felt, God, I just cried all the time. did you clean your room, Gina? I'd be like, no, I'm so sorry. I was a never good enough daughter. I was a never good enough sister. And what happened is when I was seven, one time I went out, I was hanging out with friends. We were out getting just blasted somewhere in some abandoned, I was seven, I know, out in some abandoned houses. They were breaking things, you know, putting holes in walls, doing the things seven-year-olds do, right? Pulling pipes out of the ground. Now, everybody knows that the international sign for it's time to go home is when the street lights come on. I missed that roll call there. So my mom's out looking for a seven-year-old at 11 o'clock at night when she finally found me. I mean, and this is when I knew that I wanted to do this. And I didn't have the vocabulary with it, and I didn't actually put it all together. But when my mom said, where were you? And a lie came out of my mouth, and I got smacked across the face. Instead of wanting to cry because I was disappointing my mom one more time, I had to look down at my feet because I wanted to laugh. And for the first time, I didn't feel like a sissy la-la. I didn't feel like I was this weak kid. And I was like, I had to contain my laughter, but something internal told me it's not the right time for this. So I didn't laugh. But what I did know is that when I was drinking, this was the result for this. And what happened is I figured out that I drank because I liked the effects produced by alcohol. When I was having a really crappy day and I really wanted to just wallow in self-pity, it made it worse for me. It was perfect. When I was having a really crappy day and I wouldn't be there anymore, I didn't want to be there anymore, I could just drink and it made it better. When I was too scared to talk to you, all I had to do is drink and I had the courage. When I was scared to talk to you, but I wanted to disappear in the crowd, not have to, it gave me the ability to disappear. Alcohol was the answer. Alcohol absolutely was the answer for a very long time. But what happened is by the time I reached my junior year in high school, it hurt to breathe. Getting up in the morning and just thinking, God, I don't know how I'm going to do this one more time. You know, and then what happened is I ended up moving. I did a geographic. I ended up in another city. And it was one of the hardest decisions I'd ever made. Not because I thought that my life depended on it, but because I thought my mom's life depended on it. My mom had, being the alcoholic, worse than I was in our family at the time. I ended up being her caretaker for a long time. And I heard a lot of the time my sisters left because CPS came in and out of our lives and they ended up doing what they do and they started just a ball rolling. They didn't end up taking my sisters, but they went to live with my uncle. What ended up happening is that they did leave and my mom would say, and while she was crying, Gina, I don't know what I would do without you. I would die if you ever left. And I heard that on a regular basis. Now, with my inebriated 15-year-old brain, you know, I knew that that was a possibility. So when I was 16 years old and I made a decision to move because I thought I was going to die myself, I knew that if I left, there was a very strong possibility my mom might not make it. So I remember struggling so hard with the concept that if I leave to try to save my own ass, to try to go get sober, to do something different, that my mom might die. It was the most difficult decision I'd ever made. And I was so confused, and I stayed up all night. I was wembling. I was on like a three-day bender. I mean, I hadn't had a nap for, I don't know, a week. And finally I told my mom, I said, I've got to go. And she goes, it's okay, honey, you need it. You need to go. And I did, and I moved, and it was the scariest thing. And I ended up in a place that I ended up in Medford, Oregon. I was in the Bay Area. And then I ended up in Medford, Oregon. It was like I regressed 10 years socially up there. I went from like the melting pot to one of the most homogenized places that you could go. And I really did not fit in. And not only that, but I was stark, raving, dry. And I was, I know you guys probably don't know, I was angry. I wasn't drinking anymore. I was in new places with new people. I didn't have any skills whatsoever. And I was pissed. I was pissed that I wasn't getting high anymore. I was pissed that I didn't have my Jack Daniels. I was pissed that I had to be in this country hick town. I was just angry. And I had absolutely no skills. What happened is I ended up with a group of kids, and they said, why don't you go to Alcoholics Anonymous? And I was like, oh, my God, what a bunch of losers. My interaction with Alcoholics Anonymous was to the extent that my mom's boyfriend used to come and go, and I knew AA didn't work. Because he'd go off, he'd go to 30-day spin dry, and he'd come back talking about promises of flowers and rainbows and happily ever afters, and then 3 weeks later, he'd be drunk again, beating my mom. I'd be like, oh, that's great. Alcoholics Anonymous really works. Good job, bud. So when he came back to the table one more time and said, no, really, this time I'm on the wagon, I'm not going to drink anymore, I was like, go F yourself. At 10, 11, 12, 13, go F yourself. You can't talk to him like that. I'm like, really? Because he can hit you like that? So my belief in Alcoholics Anonymous was really shallow. Well, what they said is, look what you got now. You got anything better to do? And I'm like, well, no, I guess not. So what I did is I started going to meetings. So in February 89 to December of 89, I was in the program. I was going to meetings. I was trying to get connected. I was hanging around. God, I went to this one. The meeting I was going to, they were all like really old because I was 16 and they were super old. And I don't know, it was like the median age was like 35, 40, something like that. Right? And what happened is I'd sit there and I'd be like, oh my God, I don't know if I'm ever going to be able to stay here. And quite frankly, I was really fuzzy. I mean, because I had been kind of getting inebriated from 7 to 16, and that's a long time. I don't know, your brain's supposed to be developing or clicking and synapses isn't firing. And I really, I think I missed out on a lot of that. So it took me about a year in here to actually figure out that I was staying sober. It took me about a year to figure out that, oh, you're really not going to drink. You're not drinking. This is what? But what happened is I came to the meetings. I really didn't fit in, but these five kids that were about my same age kept me coming back and coming back and coming back, and they started teaching me how to become a part of the thing. You know, so I'd go to meetings, but I still didn't get it. I didn't get that connection with God. I had a sponsor in name only. They said, hey, Gina, this is Jim. He's your sponsor. Gina, Jim, Jim, Gina. I'm like, hey, what's up? And then I never talked to him again, unless I saw him in a meeting, and I'm like, oh, my God, I'm so great. And then I'd go out and threaten to kick your ass because you broke my cup. True story. Don't break my Gumby mug. So, stark ravings sober, no program to speak of, no connection with God. And I'd go and I'd try to read the big book, and I thought for sure I was going to get it, and I didn't understand it. You guys all got something here that I didn't understand, and I didn't know why. And I was sitting there, and I tried to read this big book, but I don't know if you guys know this or not, but the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous is not very alcoholic friendly. It needs an interpreter. We call them sponsors. So what happened is trying to do this thing solo did not work, and in December I ended up in an old place, back in the Bay, right, with old friends doing old things. New Year's Eve party, what? I had no God to speak of. I wasn't working steps. I wasn't going to meetings. Can you figure out what happened?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And so up until this point in time, I mean, I knew I needed to change my life, and I knew I was going to kind of stop drinking and all that kind of weird stuff, but I really didn't want to stop drinking. And by the time I get to this point in my life, I was like, I really don't want to drink anymore. My story was not one of those where I was like, oh my God, I didn't want to drink, and I tried to quit so many times, but alcohol, I was just never like that. They're like, why do you use? Because I want to. I mean, that was truly my answer for it all. So until this point in time, I'd never had that like struggle that I hear lots of people talk about with alcohol, trying to quit and trying to put it down. And one more broken promise. I didn't have those because I never made those promises because I knew I was getting drunk. But December 31st, 1989, I was at that party. And, you know, Beastie Boys, Brass Monkey, License Yellow come out. What? Right? So there's a bottle of Brass Monkey in the back. And my alcoholic drink, you know, my alcoholism dresses my drink up. It doesn't say, you need a drink. It says, oh, my God, you've never tried Brass Monkey. What is a girl supposed to do? So what it ended up doing is I stood in front of that ball and I cried. Because for the first time in my life, I didn't want to drink anymore. And the loudest voice in my head was the one telling me, you had never tried Brass Monkey. I heard the other voice that said, that's none too smart. But it was so quiet because I hadn't developed that conscious contact. I hadn't done the footwork. I didn't have practice doing something different.
To obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the Month Club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.
And I ended up drinking anyways. I left the party that night, and I can tell you I still don't know what Brass Monkey tastes like. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I was a little too much up in here at the moment. And I'd like to say that, oh my God, Alcoholics Anonymous like opened up for me and God came rushing in and I started working your program. That's not what happened. I started going to meetings again and never said anything and I kept collecting chips. And you know, and it wasn't until I graduated and it was June of 90, I moved down up into the foothills over here with my grandmother and I was scared to death of not being able to stay sober. And so I went into a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous up there the first night that I moved down and I went into the meeting and I said, I need help. I don't know what to do and I'm scared. And if you want help, that's all you got to say in a room of alcoholics. You know, I am responsible. When anyone anywhere reaches out for help, I want the hand of AA always to be there. And for that, I try to do that to the best of my ability today. See, because I really do not want anybody in this room, out of this room, who wants recovery, who does not want to be a slave to alcohol anymore, to ever feel like I felt like when I got here. It's a horrible feeling. And I understand. And it doesn't matter what the backgrounds are. It doesn't matter whether our social, economic backgrounds are. It doesn't matter any of that. So what happens is I went to that fellowship and they started teaching me how to interact with other human beings. Because I had been around, a lot of people in my life thus far because I was alive and I was sucking in air and I was on this planet and I was partying. I'd been to plenty of parties and I'd been with a lot of people, but I had no idea how to communicate with you. They started telling me how to be a part of, and it was really similar to Solisa's experience last night. They'd be like, hey, we're having a picnic tomorrow. You come on down. I'm like, no, I'm cool. They're like, really? You should come. And I'm like, no. They're like, good, bring potato salad. We'll pick you up. You know? Hey, we're going to go swimming at the river, you know, come over. I don't have a bathing suit. Donya does. She'll let you borrow one. I'm like, I got to work at 3. Great. Tony's coming down to hill at 2. We'll give you a ride. I'm like, what part of leave me alone don't you people hear when I say no thank you? You know, but they didn't let me sit on the sidelines. So I spent my first 3.5 years in the program, I started getting involved. I went to meetings. They didn't have any young people up there except for me. So I was about 18 at the time. We started a young people's meeting. I was the young people. It was on Sundays. They made me the secretary. It was fabulous. And I secretaried it for like 3 years because there was no other young people. I started getting involved. I started doing hospitals and institutions work. I was like going into the Women's County, the Mule Creek State Prison. You know, I was going into CYA Pine Grove, CYA Pioneer. I volunteered to be on all the committees. And what happened is about 3.5 years into this gig, I sat down on my bed and I put a shotgun in my mouth because I was absolutely dying still. Because I hadn't done a thorough house cleaning. I hadn't finished the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I came in here and I did all kinds of shit. I fellowshipped the crap out of this place. I did service like you couldn't believe. But I hadn't done the thorough house cleaning. I didn't have that trust in my higher power. You know, I kept doing the 1-2-3 shuffle and I'd give God a lot of things, but not everything. And what happened is I was really afraid. There was like this piece of me I wasn't willing to give up to anybody else. There was this piece that I was really afraid of. When I was, 12 or 13, my mom had asked me one time, are you gay? And I'm like, what? Hell no. Why are you asking? Why would you ask that? And then I'd walk away scratching my head going, what's gay? I had friends the whole time I was growing up talking about, you're a lesbian. I'm like, you know, why you guys got to be dicks? Why do you have to, right? This was my mentality. Why do you have to... And I had so much fear. So when I was finally about the 3.5 year sober mark, I was finally starting to thaw out internally, emotionally. And I mean, because when I was out there, really, I didn't have any time for anybody. I didn't care who you were. I had time for my bottle and that was it. So it was kind of hard to figure out who the heck you are when I'm inebriated the whole time. So I was about 3 years dried out now, and I was starting to have stuff. And one of the biggest things was I thought I might be a lesbian. And I was scared to death. I was absolutely scared to death because I don't know how to be a lesbian. How do you be a lesbian? I don't know. What were my friends going to say? I just found this new family in Alcoholics Anonymous, and are they going to hate me? Oh, my God, conservative, Republican, you know, foothills, are you kidding me? What is my family going to say? What are my sisters going to say? You know, am I going to burn in hell like I hear about all the time? I don't know. I don't know, you know. And so I sat there with that shotgun in my mouth. talking about God. I don't know how I'm going to do this. I have no clue. I'm sober. I'm supposed to be like, yay, happy. And all I want to do is die right now because I think I might be gay, but I don't even know how to do that. And I heard just this quiet voice say, it's okay. Why don't you just do like we do here in Alcoholics Anonymous? Just take it one day at a time. I was like, whoa. And so I was like, okay, I'm willing to do that. I'm willing to do that. I don't know what it's going to look like. I don't know how my life's going to be, but I'm willing to do that. So I put those Doc Martens on, and then I just never took them off, really. Yeah. You know, and part of the thing is I was so scared about that whole lesbian thing coming out, and what happened is I never even mentioned it in my fourth or fifth step. Holy crap, never, not once. But what happened is I was willing to give that biggest, most scariest piece of mind to God, and I did. And that's what opened up the rest of the steps for me. Because right after that, I finally got a sponsor. I started working for her. I did a four-step. It's the most archaic four-step I've ever seen. I've seen a lot of fifth steps from sponsees, and this thing, it's just, I have it still. I'm like, what? But what that thing did was it opened up the rest of the steps for me. It opened up everything because I did four, and then I was finally able to do five. And then from there, I did six. I mean, I was just like steamrolling through these things. And the quality of my life changed dramatically. Being an Alcoholics Anonymous and doing the steps and being an Alcoholics Anonymous dry as a tinder, not doing them, two completely different experiences. I am not perfect. I screw up still all the time. I piss people off on a regular basis. But I come into Alcoholics Anonymous, and what you guys have said, guess what? We've got things that we do here that says, it's okay, you can do it again. You get another chance, you can do it again. How about trying to do it different this time? Oh, didn't work this time. How about you can do it again? What, you screwed up again? Good, you can do it again, and you can do it again, and you can do it again. I can screw up as many times as I want to here, and I can still keep coming back, and I get to do it again, even if it's the same damn thing. I have shown my ass in Alcoholics Anonymous because I've grown up here. I've been here since I've been going to meetings since I was 14. I've been involved in actually going to meetings since I was 16. So I have absolutely grown up here and done everything at 16, 17, 18, 19, all the way up to standing here present person would do when they're screwing up and acting a fool. And I have done it here. And then I have come in here and said, yeah, that was me, my bad. And you're like, that's all right. Keep coming back anyways. And the great thing is because of all those things that I've done in between, I haven't had to take a drink. And it's not because I think I'm, you know, it's not because I think I've got this thing licked. It's because I've actually stayed here and done the work and established that contact with a higher power that I know is going to get me stay here. I continually have to keep doing this thing. I'm absolutely human, and I'm going to continue to make some mistakes, sometimes the same ones. But I get to keep doing this thing over and over again. I don't have to take a drink to start over in Alcoholics Anonymous. I have lots of friends, and I just talked about this the other day. There are so many people I know in Alcoholics Anonymous who feel like, oh my God, things have gone to shit, and they take a drink so they can start over. You don't have to do that. If you're in pain, and you're sitting here, and you're miserable, and you think things aren't going right, and it looks like there's no way out, good, stay. Start over today. You can start over without taking a drink. I was here for about 10 years the first time I heard actually somebody talk about my story. I'd been in Alcoholics Anonymous and I heard a lot of identification pieces that I'd heard from everybody in here, but I had never really heard my story. Someone kept trying to get me go to Young People in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm like, blah, 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 right, don't they trash hotels? Because it happened once, so that's the only thing anybody ever hears, including me. I'm like, that's all they do is trash hotels and screw up and act a fool and blah, blah, blah. So finally, a friend of mine trying to get me go for like 2-3 years. I was about 10, 12 years sober, something like that. I went to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I sat down in the meeting, and someone was sharing, and she told my story for the first time. I had never heard my story in here. 10 years I'd been around here, but I had never heard my story. And they didn't do it right at the meeting, and they screwed up, and the secretary wasn't doing her job, and they didn't treat it. So what happened is I kept going back to the young people's meetings. And what happened is I started getting involved. And I know I am not necessarily a young people anymore, but I got here when I was young. And I continue to do work in Young People in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm a member of SACUPA, which is the Sacramento Area Young People of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, we're a WACUPA bid meeting. WACUPA is the Western Area Conference of Young People in Alcoholics Anonymous. The conference is actually going to be December this year in Hawaii. We're actually bidding for it to try to get the conference to come back to Sacramento next year. But what an amazing experience. I can't tell you how many times, me personally, I hear somebody talk about any meeting. Oh, my God, I've spilled more than you drank. Really? I didn't get to Alcoholics Anonymous when I was 16 because my life was fabulous and not out of control. I know what alcoholism feels like because alcoholism, John Barleycorn does not give a crap how old I am. It doesn't care. It doesn't care whether I'm a lesbian or not. My disease wants me dead. And the only defense I have against it are the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, a relationship with a higher power in the community that we call we. The identification piece in the community we have here in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, and I stay here because, A, I don't want to die, and I'm very selfish like that. And B, I want to be able to give this thing back to somebody else who walks through those doors, which is in turn quite selfish because I get to stay here because of that as well. But I want to be around here. We meet frequently so others may find us. You know, when I go into a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and I sit there, it's not always for me all the time. Sometimes I go in there and it's just because I'm looking for who I can find in there, who I can raise my hand and say, hey, this is, you're brand new here? Crazy great. Come on, we're going to do coffee afterwards. We're going to do tacos afterwards. We're going to do whatever. Everybody goes to ice cream after the meeting. You know, I have to check myself all the time because I have a lot of people that I love and care for in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I get into my home group meetings, man, and I want to chat it up. I want to commune. I want to talk to everybody. And I always have to remember what I'm here for. You know, the main purpose, my purpose now, this is amazing. I really did not have until I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, is to try to do my higher power's will to the best of my ability and carry this message and be a service. You know, and there's a lot of other service in Alcoholics Anonymous besides Alcoholics Anonymous. I had the opportunity about 4 years ago to start taking care of my grandmother. This is the same woman who, when I was about 14 years old, I was in her driveway doing some nefarious stuff, and she said, get the hell out of my house and don't ever come back. You know, the same woman who, when her health started to fail, she came up to me and she said, you know what, Gina, I love you so much, and will you please take care of me? So we got to take care of my grandmother the last 4 years of her life. And that was the most difficult and rewarding thing I've ever done, being of service. And now I'm of service to another little human being who's just a year old, stark raving crazy. And he takes up a lot of time. You know how hard it is to train him to get out of bed the right way? He doesn't listen very well. I feel like I'm in an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting when we have discussions most of the time. Just kidding. You know, my today is good. I have a wonderful wife. I wouldn't want to co-parent with anybody else. She's an amazing woman. She's also a member. I'm going to throw her under the bus. Yep, she is. And we have this great little guy that I get an opportunity. He is such the bright spot in my life today. I am so fortunate to be a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous and able to be here and to be of service in any capacity. If you didn't hear how much I love Alcoholics Anonymous today, ask me about it after the meeting. Thank you so much to the committee. I appreciate everything, and you guys are wonderful. The speaker's been wonderful. TJ, woohoo! Go team. Thank you, guys.
We hope you've enjoyed this recording. To obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.